First You'd Think is a not-for-profit ministry of the First Unitarian Church of Des Moines. Support us at ucdsm.org today.
Good morning. As Louise mentioned earlier, I am Nancy Harris. Some of you may have known me by my former name, Nancy Vanderberg. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. And yes, I'm nervous. My mother, Frances, was a very intelligent woman. She died at the age of 95, keeping all of her cognitive abilities honed and on point until the last moments of her life. But I want to tell you something about her that is incongruous with what I just said. She was well known for her stories. It's not the topic of the story that was particularly noteworthy, but that she often wandered in her telling of these stories, or even seemed to think through the first part of the story and then start vocalizing midway through, so that you had no idea what she was going to tell you. She always brought the listener around with her narrative to find a complete thought or a rational ending, but at the outset, you never really knew where you were going. As a family, these are known as Frances stories. We use that phrase today to let someone in the family know when they've entered that realm, just in case they didn't know themselves. The identification usually leads to a good laugh. I'm a very new member of this congregation. I bring with me a varied past, as we all do. In light of Sally's message last week, allow me to provide you a bit of insight into who I am. I come from a family of origin where education and intellect was highly valued. My father retired from his career after serving as the president of West Virginia Wesleyan. My mother was a fourth grade teacher. I lived in Egypt as a young child, having spoke fluent Arabic. Throughout my life, my parents had many guests at our dinner table. These guests came from around the world, representing many ethnicities. When I went to college, I had a very hard time understanding why my peers held views that made them angry when they had to integrate their lives with others who didn't look or act as they did. I have two children who are adults. One is my son, who is transgender. I am a mother whose daughter at the age of 20 died as a passenger in a car accident when the driver, also young, made a foolish mistake. I was raised in the Methodist Church. Attending church on Sunday was never an option. It was a requirement. My entire life, I had questions about what I learned through the church. When my daughter died, I was told by many church members I was supposed to feel better because she had found a better place. When my son transitioned, why did some of my most religious friends walk away from me based on religion? After these major events of my adult life, I visited many churches representing many different denominations, trying to find a place where I was comfortable and where my past helped me fit in rather than making me feel removed. I wasn't having much success. In June 2018, my sister, who is my only sibling, called to tell me that her only child at the age of 35 had died of a drug overdose. I traveled immediately to the Olympic Peninsula of Washington to help. I witnessed how her church and its members surrounded her with more love and support than I'd ever been a part of before. I witnessed the congregation of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Port Angeles, Washington, put their beliefs to work. 15 months later, I was fortunate to be able to join this very same congregation in celebrating my sister's marriage. It took me a while, but in October of 2019, I found my way through the doors of this church, and I've been very glad ever since. I attended only two services in person before heading to Florida for my snowbird experience. Of course, March 2020, the world shut down. So I returned to Iowa, but was unable to return here in person. My road to learning about the church was mostly done sidestepping COVID, joining as much as I could via Zoom at first. And then as things began to open, I joined as many small group activities as I could fit into my calendar. I didn't know any of the past ministers, nor did I know much of the conversational history. You know, the kind of history that isn't published, but is certainly present, known by many, and can contribute to the culture of the unit. As I moved through my church life here, I felt listened to, included, and understood. My past didn't separate me, but to the contrary, it was often a basis for common understanding with others. Now, up to now, you might be a little confused. How in the world does the title they, you, I fit in? I want to take us to a place of common understanding. I believe these pronouns can be a vehicle for that understanding, for listening and support. Let's move forward as I look into the answer to that question. Oh, by the way, this is what a Francis story feels like. On March 11th of this year, Barb Martin contacted me asking if I would consider speaking to the congregation. She said she would forward to me an outline explaining this request and that I could review the outline before making my decision. Barb did indeed forward to me those guidelines she mentioned. Well, I thought, I've heard others from the congregation introduce themselves and talk about their journey too and being a part of the community. I think it's called the spotlight in the service. Sure, I can do that. With this assumption that I already knew what Barb had been talking about, I didn't even look at the guidelines. You can imagine my surprise when I sat down in the back of this room at the organizational meeting for this function and reviewed the packet that was handed to me and realized how wrong I was. As my shock and fear subsided, and I was in full understanding of what was being asked of me, I settled inside my thoughts to decide what I could offer today. In reflecting on my personal church journey and with no strong feelings or connection about the past here, I realized I had been an observer and receiver of the culture of First Unitarian of Des Moines. For me, this culture has been, as I said, very positive and inclusive. But today I would like to offer a platform that will create a common understanding and common language for all of us. It is one we can use and to which we can refer in the future. Wouldn't it be glorious for all of us if we came to understand a similar language that might identify actions undermining the positive climate that we have, and maybe be able to use the common language to correct some areas that might be weak. Please note that I am using the words climate and culture interchangeably. It is within the framework of pronouns that I will talk about this church climate. Today, my representation of pronouns has absolutely nothing to do with personal preference or identification. Today, I want to offer a way pronouns can be a major part of our common goal in identifying parts of the church climate that may be leaning in a less positive direction, making corrections, and then maintaining the direction to a deep and meaningful positive culture. This message is based on years in my career. Everything I'm mentioning are my own ideas and opinions. They, you, I. I am suggesting these pronouns be used as a vehicle to look at church climate and hopefully be used as a common language to help us stay on track in keeping this a positive place. Being the educator I am, I felt I had to do some research on the subject of church climate. I found that Aubrey Malfer, a teacher at the Dallas Theological Seminary, can be quoted as saying, a church's culture includes its behavior, quote, all you would see, hear, and feel as you first encounter the congregation, unquote. Samuel Chan, author and consultant to businesses and churches on the topic of church culture, states that church culture is what you do, why you do what you do, and what you feel and experience in your church. Both authors state that the climate is usually reflective of leadership. But couldn't it be different here? Couldn't all of us be the instruments of positive climate? Shouldn't we be the major agent of that climate and then invite a leader to join it? In my opinion, every place has a climate. Since I spent my career in schools, that's where I'll start, I think you can tell what kind of climate is present in a school within the first few steps into a building. I had the pleasure of working with an elementary principal who was thoughtful, quiet, soft-spoken, and dedicated to her school family. Step into her building and those qualities would surround you. You may not be able to vocalize my exact words of description, but I guarantee the feelings related to the descriptors would be present. In another building, the administrator was jovial, talkative, and laughed a lot. Again, you would feel those things as you entered the building. I would like you to take just a reflective moment, please, and think about a place you have visited or been a part of. For most of us, that's a place of employment that would come to mind first, but it could be other places, a business, a committee on which you served, maybe a volunteer organization where you were involved. As you reflect, what was the climate you encountered? Did you notice it right away? What about places most of us have in common? Here's one, a dentist's office. Your favorite restaurant? What about an historic cathedral you might be visiting on vacation? Now, with that thought in mind, let's shift to the common ground, right here. If you've been a part of this community for years, it might be difficult to remember what you felt as you entered for the first time. But please try. What climate did you absorb when you entered? Do you believe you can feel the climate of our community upon entry, no matter how long your tenure? I'd like you to keep those thoughts in mind as I present how I believe pronouns relate. They. I think this pronoun is present in most locations with an angry climate. It is here that you listen to people involved in that climate. You might hear sentences such as, they should do this and that, and things would be better. They have never, they always. It's a blaming word, and I personally think it signals wider spread dissatisfaction. I have recently learned, thanks to Louise, that this is often called othering. It's finding fault with others. I believe it can signal unhappiness, anger, and accusation. Have you ever been present in a group where this was the case? Perhaps at a meeting or an employee break room? If you have, as you reflect, was the culture representative of those sentences? Did you find discussions were centered around dissatisfaction? You. I think the use of this pronoun exists in climates that are not necessarily as widespread in it, the negative feel, but can still be present and are less than positive. By its very use, it's not large in general. It's singular and focused. You should be. You didn't. Here's one. You always. This pronoun can single a person or people who are unhappy and therefore are finding fault. By being singular, you can be a pronoun used to hurt. In some ways, it can be harmful in the fact that it's not heard in the break room, but without others present. Have you heard this used in a non-productive manner? Do you remember how you felt when you heard it? Or even worse, when it was said directly to you? My challenge is that we come to an understanding as a group how these two pronouns might signal unhappiness, and that the group could be moving off course from its positive current culture. What if we could help by using this common understanding to call attention to kindness, with kindness, to someone, using it in a less than positive manner? They might be the only signal word that you need, since we have a common understanding that it's a signal. Wouldn't it be helpful to use that to facilitate an awareness and hopefully allow a conversation to ensue moving toward a positive direction? Just one or two words, they or you. So what about I? Well, I think it's a pronoun of reflection and ownership. I've been present in group settings where this is usually positive. Things like, I see this committee is presenting its findings and I have some suggestions to offer. Or, I want to help. I'm willing to focus on moving us forward. Could we as a group standardly present to someone after we hear they or you that you'd like to help them move toward I? Could we as a group standardly use this language and the message be known in just a few words? What if we as a group use these pronouns to be aware of our culture? What if we use them as a key to listening, as a common language? In the title, you saw three pronouns, but I think today, right here, we need to add a fourth. We. Just imagine what could happen here as a community if we uniformly asked fellow congregants to please avoid they and you statements, to help everyone move forward to I statements. But most importantly, think of the power that would exist when this group moves to, or rather stays with, the use of we. We are committed to positive action. We are committed to encouraging each other. We are committed to extending the positive climate we currently own. We are committed to finding answers rather than finding fault. We are good at using I. We are an intelligent group of open-minded deep thinkers. Just think of the power that can be held when moving forward as a community with the common goal of we.